listening to Louisiana Considered, a new daily show about South Louisiana from WWNO in New Orleans and WRKF in Baton Rouge. I'm Patrick Madden, news director for both stations, and we'll be covering the top stories and bringing you lively conversations with the region's top journalists, newsmakers, and artists. And we'll be coming to you live Monday through Friday, every day at noon. So thank you for joining us today. And we kick off today's inaugural episode of Louisiana Considered with, to put it lightly, a lot going on. We're going to talk later about Senator Bill Cassidy's monumental vote in the impeachment trial and also discuss the latest with Mardi Gras. But first, we need to start with the weather today. It's been really an unusually harsh winter storm that's bearing down on the region this Monday, forcing road closures, power outages, and basically making a mess of everything outside right now. And not long before going to air at 12 noon, the mayor-president of Baton Rouge, Sharon Weston Broom, signed a parish-wide state of emergency. So we're going to start our coverage today with WWNO WRKF meteorologist Dan Holliday. First of all, Dan, thank you for being with us today. And I guess let's just start off with this weather. How bad is it going to get today, tomorrow? What are we looking at right now?
Well, you know, Patrick, it's interesting. We, you know, there are times when we have some cold snaps, but there are areas of the country that are just not seeing anything quite like this and haven't for years. But to answer the question, I think, you know, the good thing is most of the more inclement weather is going to be off to the north of us and to the west of us. Folks in Texas really dealing with a lot of headaches. But for us, it's mainly the cold, both in Baton Rouge and New Orleans. Now, going back to the Baton Rouge area, I would say that, you know, we did have some freezing drizzle and some precipitation fall this morning. And with temperatures still below freezing at 26 degrees there, it is going to be an issue in terms of some of the roadways, the side streets, bridges and elevated surfaces will be very slick. And with temperatures tonight in the Baton Rouge area dropping into the mid-teens, that will be even be more of an issue in terms of slippery spots on the road, not so much an issue in New Orleans.
Great. And Dan, real quick, I mean, what are the, as a meteorologist, what are your biggest concerns right now over the next 24, 48 hours, especially for a region that may not be used to this type of weather?
The number one thing would be staying warm, I would say. More than anything, if you can stay warm in this and do your very best, that would be most important thing to do. If you don't have to travel and you happen to have, you know, the ability to stay at home for a while or work from home, that is ideal, but we know that's not possible for everyone. So I would say, especially in the Baton Rouge area, folks that are dealing with the freezing rain that has fallen earlier, slick surfaces, it's very important if you step outdoors to just watch the surface and make sure you're not stepping out on icy conditions. But more than anything, it's just bundle up and stay warm through the situation. And overall, we're going to have wind chills ranging anywhere from 8 degrees tonight to 15 degrees or so in New Orleans. So it will be a chilly night.
Wow. So bundle up. Dan Holliday, thank you so much for joining us today. And just to get a quick sense of what it's like on the ground right now, I want to see if Paul Braun, our Capital Access reporter in Baton Rouge. Paul, if you can what is the scene like right now in Baton Rouge?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of ice on the roadways, sidewalks. You know, you'll see it sort of accumulated on rooftops and in trees all over the place. It's led to quite a few closures. You know, the State Department of Transportation and Development said earlier today that basically all state-maintained roadways in the parish are unsafe because of these icy conditions. All but one of the Mississippi River bridges between Pointe Coupee and St. Charles Parish have been shut down because of this weather. So it's definitely a big concern. And, you know, the big orders, I guess, from local officials here is just to stay inside if at all possible. As you mentioned, the state of emergency has been declared for the area.
Great, Paul. Well, thank you for covering that. We'll be hearing more from you later today on this story. And of course, we'll be having more coverage of this weather event on WWNO and WRKF later as the day evolves. And again, you're listening to Louisiana Considered. I'm Patrick Madden, and we'll be coming to you live every day at noon, Monday through Friday. Now, next up, we're going to turn our attention to a big national story from the weekend where one of Louisiana's senators, Senator Bill Cassidy, broke rank with most of the GOP and became one of seven Republican senators to vote to convict Donald Trump in the former president's impeachment trial, which concluded over the weekend in an acquittal. And, you know, this vote shocked many in state politics. To give you a sense of how big a deal it was actually featured on the front page of the New York Times today. And the paper describes in detail sort of why Cassidy felt the way he did and why he did this. So now joining us to discuss Cassidy's vote is Stephanie Grace, political columnist for The Advocate and Times-Picayune. And we should also mention that Stephanie is our regular co-host on Friday's Louisiana Considered when we tackle all things politics. Stephanie, first of all, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
So, yeah, just, I mean, how big a deal was this vote in your opinion?
Well, I mean, it didn't tip the balance. We should say that right offhand. The former president was not convicted, but it was a surprise. And it was of the seven, it was really the biggest surprise, probably. Bill Cassidy is someone who is, once upon a time, he was a Democrat. So were a lot of Louisiana Republicans, but he's a conservative. He votes with the party. He's kind of one of these guys who does try to find middle ground on issues, but he's really never broken with Trump in the 4 years until now. And really, actually, I should say until November. It does go back a little bit. He, in November, a few weeks after the election, came out and said, look, Joe, I didn't vote for him, but Joe Biden's president, that's the deal. And while other Republicans, including all the other Republicans in the state congressional delegation, have kind of followed Donald Trump down this increasingly bizarre, lawless path to try to overturn the election, including these, you know, some of these lawsuits, Cassidy did not. And he was, I have to say, he seems very comfortable in his decision. Of course, he was just reelected for 6 years. So if he decides to run again, he's got a lot of time to get beyond this with the people who are angry at him. But one of the interesting things he said in that New York Times article is that, you know, he thinks people will move his way. And once the kind of fervor dies down, once more of the facts come out, he said he personally was motivated by the fact that he got an email from a friend who was repeating these lies about the election that Donald Trump was telling, and he was furious about it, and he was alarmed that they were really kind of taking hold out there in the community. And it, you know, he said, I've read about these great men and great women who've served in government and, you know, to fight for these very things that are in danger by this campaign. And he made a very principled case for what he did. And he, you know, filmed this very interesting, very short video where he looked right in the camera and said, I found the president guilty because he's guilty. And, hit me almost.
May have been one of the shortest political speeches, I think, or videos at least I've seen in
right,
a while.
Right, exactly. Yes. Two lines.
So real quick, Stephanie, I mean, do you think that, so you don't think this is a one-off thing, but do you think Senator Cassidy may be trying to become more of like a maverick in the Senate or fill a different sort of lane than he has in the past?
I think so. I think he's taken some steps in the past, but now, of course, he's dealing with the Democratic majorities in the Senate and the House and the White House, of course. So, you know, there's a good place for somebody who is in the conversation. And he's been in the conversation on issues like healthcare and certainly on the stimulus that is still kind of going through the system.
Great. Thank you, Stephanie Grace. And we'll read The Advocate for more of your columns, and we'll listen for you on Friday. Thank you, Steph.
Okay, see you then.
Again, you're listening to Louisiana Considered on WWNO and WRKF. I'm Patrick Madden. And now we're going to turn our attention to Mardi Gras. And this year, with the pandemic still raging across the U.S., officials have shut down bars and set up checkpoints. You know, almost a year ago, New Orleans emerged as an early COVID-19 hotspot and is now trying to avoid the same fate. Yet the city is still, in some respects, welcoming tourists, which has led to pushback. WWNO reporter Aubrey Yuhas reported this feature for NPR, which aired on Friday.
New Orleanians typically spend the weeks between Epiphany and Fat Tuesday eating, drinking, and partying. Last year's festivities drew more than 1 million visitors, and a recent study found the gatherings resulted in nearly 50,000 coronavirus infections. This year, there are no parades, and many locals have pledged to sit the season out. But that hasn't stopped people from flocking to Bourbon Street. Videos have circulated of largely unmasked crowds clutching to-go drinks and dancing. And despite admonishments from the city, people are still breaking the rules. On Saturday afternoon, about half of the people in the city's French Quarter were unmasked, openly defying the city's mandate. Revelers stopped to catch Mardi Gras beads thrown from balconies, and one middle-aged woman lost her mask in the process. It fell to the ground, and she didn't pick it up. Scenes like these horrify Meg Maloney, a 24-year-old cook. While Mardi Gras is known as a season of fun, she's usually stuck working.
Sometimes it's nice. You get off of a 13-hour shift and you go catch the end of the parade and have a drink with your coworkers or whatever. But now, I mean, most of us are going to be running for the hills because we don't want to have a further risk of catching COVID, right?
In January, she was exposed to the coronavirus at work and took 2 weeks off without pay to quarantine. Maloney says she wants the city to do more to protect hospitality workers. Here's New Orleans Mayor LaToya Cantrell.
Know that when it comes to our health and our people, especially our hospitality workforce, I'd rather be accused of doing too much than doing too little.
She's already announced new restrictions for Mardi Gras weekend in response to recent large gatherings in the French Quarter. Starting today through Mardi Gras Day on Tuesday, all bars will be closed citywide. Tourist-heavy areas will have police checkpoints to prevent crowding, and the Claiborne Corridor, a local gathering spot, will be fenced off. The city relies heavily on tourism. In a typical year, sales and property taxes account for more than 40% of its operating budget. Now, most of that money is gone.
We estimate we're still losing about $120 to $130 million a week.
That's Stephen Perry of New Orleans & Company, a tourism organization that serves as a marketing agency for the city. Before this new wave of restrictions, businesses have been hoping for a Mardi Gras bump. For much of the pandemic, hotel occupancy has been in the single digits. During last year's Mardi Gras festivities, it was above 90%. Perry says local restaurants and hotels are exceedingly safe, and the best way to protect businesses is to let them stay open.
If you shut them down, you're talking about the abject failure of hundreds of small business people and their inability ever to reopen.
While some of the crowds on Bourbon Street have been locals or college students, Will Sutton says tourists are a big part of the problem. Sutton is a New Orleans native and a columnist for the local paper. He says city leaders should tell everyone to stay home for Mardi Gras.
It's like having a house party. If you have a house party, it's your party. And if it's your party, you decide who gets to come. We like seeing people come and have a good time at our party. But who wants to have a party and have a bunch of people get sick?
Sutton says he's pleased with the new restrictions and hopes people stay home so they can celebrate next year. For NPR News, I'm Aubrey Juhas in New Orleans.
And that was Aubrey Juhas reporting for the network. That story first aired on Friday, and obviously some things may have changed since then, but a lot hasn't. Aubrey joins us now, along with advocate and Times-Picayune columnist Will Sutton, who you also heard in that piece. First of all, thank you guys both for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
Thank you.
Will, let's start with you. I mean, you've written a series of pieces for the columns, for the paper, you know, urging folks that are not from Louisiana to stay out of Louisiana, and for everyone here in the region, not just in Orleans Parish, but St. Bernard, St. Tammany, Jefferson Parish, for everyone really to work together when it comes to restrictions and helping keep clamping down on the virus. So I guess, Will, just first of all, based on, you know, what you've seen or heard, you know, do you have a sense of how things are going yet? And can you talk more about why it's important to have this sort of unified front?
Well, I think we've gotten a blessing this weekend with the chilly and freezing weather, being in and around New Orleans and southern Louisiana. We don't care to go out in the cold unless, of course, it's an LSU football game. but we prefer to stay indoors and imbibe and drink and eat and have fun. But based on what I've seen through the weekend, it looks like we're doing decently well. And that's a good thing, but it seems to be weather-driven and the precautions and restrictions in the city. I did drive around and see some house floats and to go along the Claiborne corridor, because that's one of my spots. It's very weird to see the fences up. Those are the kinds of things that I think we have to do to make sure that we remind people and prevent people from gathering in large crowds.
Aubrey, same question to you. Do you have a sense from what you've seen so far?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of the same things that Will mentioned. I do think the weather is playing a big role, because I have heard from some people, you know, that they, you know, people may not necessarily know that the bars are closed, people showing up and saying, wait, what do you mean Mardi Gras is canceled? Now, we know Mardi Gras isn't canceled, locals are still celebrating safely, but we are seeing fewer tourists. That said, because restaurants are open, I have heard reports of, you know, packed restaurants. I've driven past some restaurants where you can see people kind of crowded on the outdoor porches, things like that. But some restaurants deliberately decided to close this weekend through Mardi Gras because they didn't want to have crowds. They wanted to protect, you know, their restaurant workers. So we are seeing businesses, you know, take additional precautions. One concerning thing, I do live near the French Quarter. I haven't seen party buses during the pandemic. I have seen a couple party buses this weekend, more tour vehicles. So we are seeing more people than usual, but obviously, you know, nowhere near what the typical amount would be.
Right. And Will, it must be, you know, it must be tough to be the mayor right now, because on one hand, you're doing everything in your power to try to keep the virus from spreading right now and putting these restrictions in place. But on the other hand, you know, the economy here relies on tourism, it relies on restaurants and bars, and a lot of people are struggling right now.
A lot of people are struggling. And I think too often we position this as people's lives versus the economy. And then we kind of drop off from there. But the reality is there is no economy without the people. And a big part of the economy is not just the profits and the revenue that business owners and managers achieve from their hard work, but it's hard work with the people who are employed. These are jobs, whether it's part-time or full-time or casual time or sometime. These are people who are making livings. And so these restrictions are hurting a lot of people. But as we look at what's happened over the last 11 months or so, we need to look at the ups and downs of the community spread of the virus and look at the number of cases and the deaths. We're getting to a better point now, but it's not like the virus has disappeared. So we have to keep people well, we have to avoid deaths, and we have to make sure that we're doing what's necessary to significantly reduce this virus, because even with the current restrictions and what's about to happen, it's going to be summer or fall before we get to a really good place.
That's right. These are all really good points. That's advocate columnist Will Sutton. Will, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And thank you, Aubrey Juhas. You can hear Aubrey's reporting here on WWNO and WRKF. Thank you, Aubrey.
Happy to do it.
And again, you're listening to Louisiana Considered. I'm Patrick Madden, and we're going to now go to a big story that broke out of Baton Rouge last Friday. And what the mayor president there, Sharon Weston Broome, announced that police would stop sicking its police dogs on juveniles who are fleeing police and don't pose an immediate threat. Now, this announcement comes in direct response to a new investigation by the Advocate and the Marshall Project, which found that Baton Rouge's police dogs have been biting people at an alarmingly high rate, and many of these people, more than a third, were 17 years or younger. So we're now pleased to bring on the two reporters who worked on this story, Bryn Stoll and Grace Tuohy. They reported this for The Advocate, but we want to point out that both have since moved on to new outlets, and we want to also congratulate them on their new jobs. Bryn is with the Baltimore Sun. Grace is with the Orlando Sentinel. Grace, I'll start with you. Did you get a sense in your reporting of why Baton Rouge police seem so ready to use these police dogs to chase down suspects? I mean, it seems like from the data that you guys published that this is pretty unusual.
Yeah, so it's not unusual in Baton Rouge, as we reported, but, you know, even initially we just compared to New Orleans, and the New Orleans Police Department rarely uses their police dogs. You know, they're not biting people like they are in Baton Rouge. But, you know, it really comes down to what we heard from experts. It's policy and training, and, you know, the policy in Baton Rouge, it doesn't specifically mention juveniles. So, you know, there's no explicit policy if, you know, the dog should be used on juveniles or should be restrained when dealing with juveniles. You know, and there's nothing that says, you know, there has to be a specific level of threat. You know, they say the Baton Rouge Police Department has said if there's a felony that they believe is happening and if someone runs, that's a reason that they would send their dogs out. But other police departments, that's not how it's done. So that's what we're seeing.
Great. And Bryn, I'll go to you. I mean, the mayor almost immediately responded to the article saying that the city would review and update its policies. I think one of the most interesting things in your reporting was when you guys looked at the 911 calls to see why police were called to the scene, to see sort of what were the reasons police were coming. What did you find when you looked at these dispatch codes?
Yeah, so we initially had wanted to do a kind of a more in-depth analysis looking at the underlying arrest records and charges. That wasn't possible because Louisiana makes all of its juvenile records confidential. But we were able to use what they call dispatch codes. These are the numbered codes that they use over the radio to indicate the kind of crime. It was more than half of them were unauthorized use of a motor vehicle, which is usually a suspected stolen car. About a third more of them on top of that were burglary. So mostly felony, but kind of relatively low level felony property crimes. And this lined up pretty much exactly with what we'd been hearing from people who work in the juvenile justice system, especially juvenile public defenders and judges, that a lot of these bites are happening at night. A police officer pulls over a car that they believe is stolen, and a group of young people, often teenagers or in their early 20s, jump out and take off running. And the canine officers will use the dogs to try to catch up with them as they sprint off or hide under houses or go off running. And these often teenagers or young adults end up with some pretty big scars and wounds in their legs as a result of the dogs catching them.
And real quick, as we wrap up here, but Bryn, any sense of what's next? I mean, I know the mayor has announced sort of it's going to review policies, but do we know what steps they might take?
We don't. And, you know, her announcement, she said she immediately was telling the chief to no longer use dogs in situations where the juveniles didn't pose an immediate threat. Obviously, the Baton Rouge Police Department contends that is already how they use the dogs, that the fact that these are people who are suspected of a crime and are running poses a potential threat. So I think it's going to really depend on when they get into the policy review, how much they change that. I mean, if you look at, for example, the New Orleans Police Department, very, very different canine use policies. Mm. They do not allow them to be used in the vast majority of situations that result in bites in Baton Rouge.
Great. Well, you can read more of that story by going to The Advocate and reading Bryn and Grace's investigation. Bryn and Grace, thank you so much for being here today.
No, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And good luck. Good luck on your new jobs.
Appreciate it.
And you've been listening to Louisiana Considered here on WWNO and WRKF. I'm Patrick Madden, and that wraps up our first show here. We want to thank all of the guests who appeared today. We will have this episode up on our websites, WWNO.org and WRKF.org, shortly. And we will be back tomorrow with Karen Henderson hosting and talking more about the weather, about Mardi Gras, and everything else that's happening in South Louisiana. I just want to thank our engineers, Garrett Pittman, Adam Voss, producer Alana Klein. And tune in tomorrow, Monday to Friday, 12 o'clock noon. Thank you for listening.